Welcome to All About Business with me, James Reed, the podcast that covers everything about business, management, and leadership. Every episode, I sit down with different guests who have bootstrapped companies, masterminded investment models, or built a business empire. They're leaders in their field, and they're here to give you top insights and actionable advice so that you can apply their ideas to your own career or business venture.
What happens when a centuries-old luxury industry is suddenly disrupted? And how do you build a premium brand in a market that's changing fast? Today on All About Business, I'm joined by Natalie Morrison, founder of Astrea London, a lab-grown diamond brand, redefining what luxury jewelry can look like. In this episode, we discuss leaving a career in finance to start again, the rise of lab-grown diamonds, and how to build a business at the intersection of ethics, innovation, and luxury. Today on All About Business, I'm really delighted to welcome Natalie Morrison, who is the founder and CEO of Astrea London. This is a high-end lab-grown diamond jewelry brand that you founded, Natalie, in 2023. And the brand focuses on ethical and sustainable luxury, using the very top end of lab-grown diamonds with a very high level of purity, I understand. So this is a level of purity rarely found in nature, but you can make these diamonds in your laboratories, Natalie. Is
absolutely
that right?
Absolutely.
So thank you for coming and talking to me, because this is a really disruptive new focus in the jewelry industry. You're leading this change. I'm fascinated by this story. Could you begin by saying, how did you get into lab-grown diamonds? Start about the origin story, I suppose.
First of all, thank you for having me. It's nice to see you again. Lovely to see you. So I, very quick background, I grew up in a place called Saint-Emilion in the south of France, where we make wine, as I was saying. We have a few vineyards around the world. Went to Cambridge here and then started in banking. So this is previous life where I set up some wealth management firm that I sold to private equity. And I thought I will never work again after I sold.
So there's a lot in what you just said, Natalie. So you came from France to England. You studied at Cambridge.
Correct.
You then went into wealth management. You had a career in wealth management,
correct,
in banking for how long?
20 years.
So you worked in wealth management. And you raised, I understand, huge amounts of money for your clients.
I was okay.
How much are we talking about? You're being modest.
I set up the private office for Coutts, which is the ultra net wealth business, where we raise around 30 to 40 billion, I think it was.
Coutts Bank. And it's famous for private wealth management.
Mm-hmm.
So you set that up.
I set up the ultra net wealth business, which is everybody with 10 million plus.
Right.
And then I decided to do it on my own. And I set up two wealth management firms that I sold the latest one to a private equity group 6 years ago.
Right.
And I was really keen on spending time with the children and not working again. I had done pretty well. And I started doing a lot of charity work for 2 years. One is because I've got my own charity in South Africa, giving education to kids from underprivileged background. And also because I started doing it with the school. And interestingly enough, when I realized doing all this charity work, how many of these kids, come from background in the mine industry where all of them or their family has been damaged or hurt or died in mines. And I realized...
So you saw that firsthand in South Africa.
Yeah. So we've got, in the charity we have, it's in a place called Limpopo. It's around 2 hours north of Johannesburg. I started this program with some girlfriends 15 years ago. And we've got around 160 kids, which we got out of poverty, and gave them an education. And so we spent a lot of time understanding where those kids come from, how can we help the wider community. And if you see the damage that the mine industry is doing in Africa, honestly, I'm going to use a bad word, but it's disgusting. And that's what gave me the idea. And then
There's the film Blood Diamond, isn't it, that I've seen, which describes that.
Which Leonardo DiCaprio.
Very graphically. But you've seen it for yourself. And so you're aware of children dying in mines still today.
Well, it's better than it used to be.
Yeah.
So they have much more process in place. It's called the Kimberley process that they put in place. But still, I mean, even if you just go not as extreme as children dying, it's also... you know, the deforestation, the amount of energy and water that they use, the explosive that they use. There's some villages which have actually completely gone because of it. So my point is, there is no need today to damage our planet for wearing those beautiful jewelry. We can now make them in a lab. And I always used to say that actually I love mine diamonds. I'm still wearing some, my engagement ring, it's emotional and everything. Mm. But I think with science and technology, we can embrace the past and welcome the future. I think it's just going to change completely the industry. And it's already, you can see it in the numbers already.
Well, this is very interesting. I mean, for people who can't see, you're wearing quite a lot of sparkling things, some of which are your own products, I think.
Well, they all are, actually. I mean, beside my engagement ring, which actually is a Cartier one that I got from my engagement because it's sentimental. And also, I really, as I said, I really think the two industries can really work together. Whether it's mine or lab, they keep fighting. I don't think there's a reason
So I can see the logic that you think there's an alternative here that people mm-hmm. are going to embrace, which is diamonds that are made in labs and don't involve blowing up parts of the planet and doing a lot of damage to sort of communities.
Exactly. And you get landscape. Exactly the same result. They are much cheaper as well, obviously, because it doesn't cost
exactly
as much.
Exactly the same result.
Exactly the same result.
So, you know, for those like me who don't know how this process works, how do you make a diamond? What are you actually doing in the lab to deliver exactly the same result?
So let me first answer the question how I got there. That was your first question. Yeah. I did 2 years of research to answer the question you just asked me right now. And I put a lot of my own money into this. I really wanted to understand, is it really true that they are exactly the same? Because that's the main question. And the answer is yes. It's a seed of carbon who, instead of growing in the ground and being pushed up by the mantle and then taking years to exploit to go down and get, you put the same seed of carbon, which originally the first one was natural, in a lab.
Sorry, a seed of carbon?
Yes.
What is that?
It's a little flat, little piece of carbon, basically, right. That you put in like a big microwaves, right? And we replicate exactly what happened in the Mother Nature.
Over millions of years, I suppose.
Over millions of years into those reactors,
right?
Which are like microwaves. And by doing that, they grow within 4 to 6 weeks and you get exactly the same product.
So you're putting a bit of carbon in a microwave and 4 to 6 weeks later, I mean,
That's the quickest way
to
say it.
That's a great summary, but it sounds amazing. Yes, you have a sort of sparkling bauble that comes out.
Actually, a lot of people don't realize, but it takes the same time to make the diamond under the earth.
Right.
It just takes billions of years for it to go back up the surface and for us to be able to extract it from the planet.
Oh, I see. So it's sort of happening sort of deep in the
It's happening
planet.
Deep in the mantle, yeah.
And then it takes a long time to surface.
That's correct, yeah.
Interesting.
So, but in our reactors / microwave, as I call it, you just have to put the seed there of carbon, which is exactly the same seed as you will have under the ground. And so 4 to 6 weeks later, it will have grown and you open and it becomes a diamond.
Right.
And then it's a little bit of a black. There's a lot of polishing and the same exercise than with a diamond who come from the ground.
But your business, Astria, as I understand it, really focuses on the high-end diamonds.
That's correct.
You've made a decision to do that. What makes a diamond high-end and why did you take that path?
Okay, so when I looked at the industry, and first of all, I was amazed by the fact that there is zero difference chemically, optically, structurally between a lab and a mine diamond. I always make a pretty bad analogy saying I've got 4 children, 2 of them are IVF, 2 of them are natural conception. Are you telling me that there is a difference between them? No. And it's not the nicest one, but it's true. Right.
But you couldn't tell, obviously, that one was one and one was the other. That's what you're saying, huh?
That's my point. And it's the same. There is no gemologist in the world who can see the difference between a lab and a mine diamond. Why? Because there is none.
Right.
It's the same DNA inside.
Did you know that there are nearly 1 million 18 to 24-year-olds who are currently not in education, employment or training in the UK? This is simply not good enough, and I want to do something about it. That's why Reed is launching a new initiative, giving £20,000 to young entrepreneurs to help them grow their small business. Visit reed.com/entrepreneurs to find out more. We want to support and encourage the next generation of entrepreneurs.
So this is hugely disruptive for the traditional diamond industry.
It's massive. Then. I mean, just to give you numbers, it's $100 billion market a year, the diamond industry.
Really? Yeah.
It used to be 1% of the market in 2015.
Were lab grown.
Lab grown versus mined.
Right.
It used to be 5% of the market in 2021. I think they will announce 40% for last year.
Right.
They're already saying that 70% of the engagement ring in the US are lab grown.
Right.
The Economist forecasted to be between 80 and 90% by 2030. The DMCC in Dubai say it will be 100%. Realistically, it will be a pretty high number. And why? Because you can access exactly the same product, first, without hurting the planet, second, at the real price, because they are 70 to 80% cheaper, because it doesn't cost as much to make
70
them.
70 to 80%.
Yeah.
You can see the appeal here.
And you get exactly the same. And you can get better quality than the one you had previously.
Well, I mean, I can see a world pretty soon where people won't know the difference anyway, and it's just these are cheaper diamonds.
And you get the same certificate. So that's another thing. So to answer your question, in diamonds, you have a different quality of diamonds. It's called the four Cs, cut, clarity, color, and carat. And what happened is by putting those criteria, you've got some independent firms called IGI and GIA.
Cut, clarity, cut, color, and carat.
Correct. The four
Cs. Those are what you're looking for.
Yes. And then you have independent firms called IGI or GIA who gives you the characteristic of your diamonds versus those criteria.
Right.
Depending on how high the color is or the clarity, it shows you the price of your diamond. So the highest, obviously the most expensive. The highest one are what we call D&E color.
D&E.
And that corresponds to 1% of the mined diamonds in the world.
Right.
1%. We only do those color. I only do D&E, VVS plus in terms of quality of clarity, which put us into the very, very high end. Why did I do that? Because when I set up the company, the market below, I will say £2,000, the very low hand, which is below eye color, is saturated. So today, Swarovski, all the brands on the more mass market only use lab diamonds.
Really?
They don't do mine anymore because there's no point paying more for the same thing. I wanted to position ourselves on the very top hands. So I started by putting my own money into this. Traveled the world, went to see which factories are the best factories in the world. Fell in love with the one in Dubai and in India. There's 71 factories in the world today, mainly between China and India and a little bit in Dubai. And I work between India and Dubai. And then decided.
So you're not operating the factories. You're effectively a brand that sources from these.
We
suppliers.
Source from the factories. And then those diamonds, when they are polished and cut, 90% of the diamonds in the world are polished and cut in a place called Surat in India.
Right.
From
90%.
All the diamonds. Yeah,
really?
From all the diamonds in the world. And when you go into Surat, so I open a little office in Surat where I've got gemologists there who choose the diamond, make sure that they are the color and clarity that I want. And then we put them to the lab, the IGI or GIA, to get the right certification.
Right.
And then after that, we mount them into diamonds.
Amazing. So if people are interested in finding your diamonds, Natalie, I mean, your brand is Astria. What's your URL? What's your web address? How will people find these products?
So on Instagram, we are at Astria London because that's where the new generation lives
Astria
at.
Astria London, yeah.
And on our website is www.astrialondon.com.
Right. Very good. And how much? So you say you're just producing the very high end.
Correct.
D&E, as you described. How much do these diamonds cost?
So today, well, let me start from a little bit going back on this. So the diamond industry has started exploding 100 years ago now. And we've been told that diamonds were rare, right? That means the reality is diamonds are not rare. There is enough diamonds in the world so that 8 billion people can each have half a carat.
Right.
They've been high hidden and they've been kept so that the price went up.
Right.
It's a lovely company called De Beers who has had the monopoly on those.
Yeah, they've done very well out of diamonds, haven't they?
Well, they're not at the moment. They're trying to be sold. And I think the maximum they are getting, they were valued at $12
billion yes.
in 2022. Today, they are trying to sell it for less than $1 billion and they can't.
Because of what's happening in this
because
space.
Of what's happening this in this
disruption,
space.
Yeah.
It's a massive disruption.
Yeah.
But also because people are realizing that diamonds are not rare. There is a beautiful Netflix series called Nothing Lasts Forever.
Right.
It's a documentary where Netflix was actually sued for £40 million to put that series out. And they won against De Beers. The series out and you can just watch it. It's absolutely...
Nothing lasts forever. And that's about diamonds, is it?
It's the story about how we've been lied about the diamond industry for so long.
Oh, right. And that's on
it's
Netflix.
It's fascinating.
Nothing lasts forever. I'll have a look out for that. And that was a controversy with De Beers.
That was a massive controversy with De Beers, yes.
Okay. So, all right. But you still haven't answered my question, which is how much do one of these cost, Natalie?
So, they're
not as rare as people think.
So, so the lab diamond today versus the mine diamond is around 70 to 80% cheaper for exactly the same cut, color, clarity, and price. So, with the same certificate.
Right.
So, but the reason I mentioned pricing here and I come back to De Beers is because everybody thinks diamond is an investment. But the reality is, diamonds are not an investment, whether it's lab or mine. Diamonds is a beautiful thing we love wearing. But nobody really makes money in the diamond industry unless they go into the very, very rare stones. To give you an example, today, if you buy a 2-carat D color in the mine industry, you probably, if you go to Cartier or De Beers, pay between £50,000 and £70,000, right, for 2-carat. The same equivalent in mine will be £5,000 with the same certificate, the same baby with the same DNA, right?
Right.
So why on earth do you want to buy a 50 to 70,000 one when you can buy a 5,000 one? The only reason will be if they go up in value, right?
Right.
But the reality is, by the time you leave De Beers or Cartier or any of the big brand shop, you've already lost 50% of the money. Today, if you try to resell a mine diamond, if you get 20 to 30% of what you paid for, you'll be lucky. So these are not an investment,
they're for enjoyment, is what
correct.
You're saying.
And I'm not saying it's better with a lab diamond. But at least one, you lose £5,000 at the worst. The other one, by the time you leave the shop, you've already lost £25,000. So, but some people like the idea that it comes from the ground instead of coming from the lab. So it gives customer choice, which is what is amazing.
You mentioned that in America, 70% of engagement rings are now lab grown. That's very interesting because I wonder... You know, that feels to me like the new generation is really embracing this and they don't feel that it needs to be dug out of the ground to represent what they want it to. Well, is that change happened really fast or has it been gradual?
No, it's really fast. I mean, look, in 2015, it was 1%. They only started, IGI, GIA only started grading them the same way, lab and mine, really in 2019. I mean, IGI started early, but GIA started
in 2019. So will you explain what's GIA stand for?
GIA is an IGI. They are the firms who give you the cut, carat, clarity, the four C's.
The companies that will say what it is.
The main companies who will grade diamonds.
Right. So there are two of them.
The two main ones are IGI and GIA. There's a few, but these are the two main ones that everybody trusts.
So I suppose this point you've made about them being identical is pretty key to people saying, well, I may as well get a lab-grown one.
Well, if you get the same certificate, meaning that they are real, you get the authenticity, and frankly, you get the same quality, color, and everything between
you?
Why would you? And it's 70% cheaper. Then it's a question of choice. I'm not saying... Some people still want to buy diamonds who come from the ground, right? And I'm not criticizing it. At least it gives customers choice. The young generation is very caring about sustainability. Like my little boy who is 12, if I put a piece of paper on the floor with mommy, we grew up by throwing, you know, Diet Coke on the window or cigarettes, right? So that's how we grew up. It's a very different generation. They really care and they need to care about the planet.
Yeah, no.
So this gives them the strategy about everything because you can get exactly the same thing in a way that doesn't hurt our planet.
Yes. So how are you finding the market in Britain for this? I mean, you mentioned that.
So it's interesting. So when I set up the company, I was just a mom setting it up on my kitchen table, right? And we sold around $1 million within the first year, which was good, amazing. Huh? Yeah, at 7,000 pounds on average. So it was amazing. But then I said, okay, this has legs. So I went and raised $4 million at 14 million valuation for the company. And I did it with the head of Goldman Sachs Asia, the head of Bridgepoint, the head of Man Group.
Well, these were your investors.
My investors.
These were from your previous life networks. Oh, so that's pretty good. So you had some good backers.
And by doing that, I started opening shops. So we opened here in Windsor.
So you have a shop in Windsor.
We have a shop in Windsor in the Fairmont.
Right.
My strategy was, look, education is key in life, and education is what needs to understand lab versus mind, for example, and make your own decision. But I can't spend 2 hours or 1 hour that we have today speaking to 8 billion people. So I thought if I go into hotels and I put brochures everywhere in the rooms, I will be able to communicate.
So that was your channel.
That was my channel. So we opened there. I opened 2 stores in Dubai at the Mandarin Oriental and the Five Lux. And now opening in Paris at the Mandarin Oriental. We're announcing it.
So you're really going for the hotel market.
I started like this. And then I thought, who in the world has the biggest voice, which is loved by my 80 years old mother-in-law and my 13 years old daughter wants to watch.
I can guess the answer to that. Go on, who is it?
Sex in the City. It's Sarah Jessica Parker.
Right.
So I wrote to Sarah Jessica and I say, would you be interested in discussing, I mean, she's the queen of the fashion industry. She's influenced our life and generation. And also I think she has very good values, which matters a lot to me.
So Sarah Jessica Parker is American, huh?
Correct.
Based in America.
So I wrote to her.
Sex in the City was her main.
Sex in the City was obviously our main
series.
Our main series.
And she's very well known. So you wanted to have a person who
I wanted
you.
Somebody who can communicate the message. First of all, she needed to understand the message.
Yeah.
And Sarah Jessica is a very, very clever lady, by the way.
Yeah.
She was with the Queen last night, actually, because she was also a judge at the Book Award.
Right.
So she met the Queen in New York yesterday wearing our pieces. I was very proud, actually. But I wrote to her and she invited me to come to meet her in New York. We had a very long lunch and she ended up actually becoming an investor. She owns 10% of the company and is our creative director as well.
So she owns 10%.
Correct.
So you've got about 50% then now, is that right?
A bit more than that. A
little bit more than that. Okay, so you're maintaining control, but you've got some really good business partners.
I still own 70% of the company.
70%. So she's your creative director. What does that involve? What does she do?
So she does, first she's the face of the brand.
Yeah.
And she's also, so creative director means she does 2 collections a year, around 14 pieces that she literally created herself with our designers.
This is a growing phenomenon, isn't it? Having celebrity investors, directors in all sorts of businesses now. I mean, we had a guest on the podcast who specialized in connecting people in this way. So that's worked well for you so far?
Well, the thing is that, as you said, it's a very fast-moving and it's a transformation industry, right?
Yes.
There's so much going on with lab-grown diamond, which is not just the jewelry industry. It's also semiconductors, cancer research. There's so much you can do with lab diamond, right? So it's fast-growing so rapidly that I needed the voice who can communicate the message. And so Sarah Jessica is one of them. I also have Maro Itoje, who is the
rugby player.
Rugby, captain of England.
What's he doing for you?
He's the face of the men industry because a lot of men are starting to wear jewelry.
Right.
So we do a lot of black diamonds, bracelets.
Right.
But what I've tried
How
to
much
find,
would one of those bracelets set me back?
Around 10,000 pounds.
Right.
It will be for a black diamond bracelet. It's beautiful, actually. My husband wears 2. I'm very proud.
2?
And he's a lawyer.
He's a lawyer. this is very interesting.
The reason I mentioned celebrities, I think it depends which celebrities as well. Because for me, Sarah Jessica and Maro both share the same value as mine. One thing which matters to all of us is that we give a percentage of what we make every year to charity. And I really believe that corporate should do this.
Yeah.
So Sam Bandila, which is our charity in South Africa, who give education to kids from underprivileged background, is our main charity. And I'm really, really behind this.
Right. So, well, I would support that. I mean, I'm a big fan of philanthropy companies. So that's where a portion of the shares are owned by a charity. So that's
okay,
another,
that's
another way of approaching it. Yeah, even better in a way. So, it sounds to me you've been quite astute, if I might use that word, in getting your brand out there in at a point in the history of this market where there's rapid change and a lot of new competitors, I imagine, coming out.
That's the reason I'm going so fast. Yeah, I'm trying to.
You raise money, you got some good high-profile partners, you've got some good channels through Marriott and other Fairmont and other hotel groups.
Mandarin Oriental.
Mandarin, sorry. So that's very strategic, isn't it?
And now we're attacking the US, actually. So I was in the US, I just came back. So for the charity, for some Vandilla and Cash and Rocket, we are 80 women, part of the group. And we did a car rally from Charleston to Miami last week. We raised around $1 million for the charities. And Astrea was the main sponsor.
Oh, right. So you did a car rally.
I did a car rally. I just came back yesterday morning. Yeah.
What were you driving?
Actually, I'm scared in Ferraris and all that. So I drove a Jeep.
Right. Very sensible.
So I'm a little bit scared in that thing. But all red cars that...
So this was to profile your brand as well, as raise money for the charity.
I'm mainly raising. It's 12 times I do this tour anyway, because I really believe in Cash and Rocket, and I'm really believing in women putting each other together to change the world. So, yes.
Right.
But Astrea sponsored it. So now I'm having so many connections. New York is my new destination.
New York.
I'm going in New York in May to open a store, yeah.
Oh, well, good luck with that. So will that be your second store?
No, I've got two in Dubai.
Oh, so these are not concessions, they're actual stores.
They're actual stores. So I've got one in London, in Windsor. It's a proper shop, yeah.
Yeah.
Two in Dubai. I'm opening one in Paris on the 15th of June. And now New York, hopefully in May.
Fantastic. So that's rapid expansion. So are you able to finance this now through revenues, or are you going to have to raise more money?
No, we've been really successful.
Right.
Because we are actually, I think the more people understand the lab-grown space, the more some people fell in love with it because they want to wear, sustainable as well. And also because they can get bigger stones. There's nothing we can do with lab-grown diamond that we couldn't do.
Right.
So, I mentioned the fidget ring. So I mentioned color diamonds. So we can do any colors, any stones, any shape.
For those that can't see Natalie, she's sort of pointing at some rings and bracelets that, from where I sit, are sparkling beautifully.
Thank you.
So these are your products.
But it's because they are D&E color.
You can have them made bespoke as
well. Yeah, we do a lot of bespoke pieces. So for example, we did the first necklace in the world that you can wear in 7 different ways. So it's basically detachable. So it can become earrings, necklace, bracelet. So when you travel, you can only take one set.
Oh, I see.
And travel the world. So these are things that you actually, I've got a funny jokes about that. So there is one of my first clients, very famous person, so I'm not going to say who it is, but got married for the third time. And he got married with a Chinese lady.
Right.
And she wanted 8.88 carat.
Right.
Because 8 is the lucky number. Right.
Interestingly,
and he had no limit with his budget. Interestingly, he went to Graff, De Beers, everywhere. They can do the first 8, no problem. The second 8, yes, but the third was impossible because the risk margin in the mine industry with the price of those diamonds was far too high.
Right.
So we did it in 6 weeks for much cheaper. Actually, I should have charged him much more at the time. But
so you made an 8.88. Lucky,
yeah, so we
carrot,
can do
diamond.
Anything with lab-grown diamond. There's no shape, color, anything we can't do.
Right.
Technology is an amazing tool.
So you're quite dependent, though, I think, on these manufacturers.
That's correct, yes.
So have you forged a relationship with one in particular, or how do you manage that side of this? Because you need a good supply line, don't you?
Yes, we need a very good supply line, and we need to check everything as well. So... I separated originally, half were made in Dubai, half were made in India. And the way I did it is I opened my own company in Surat. As I said to you, all the polishing and cut are happening. We put gemologists there who went and choose basically each stone one by one between all the suppliers.
Oh, so you have a lot of different people you source from.
Much, much safer.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because otherwise you're at risk of them putting the price up or
a supply line
disruption, which I imagine might have happened in Dubai recently with the war.
Dubai has been Dubai was booming for us in December, January, February, but obviously since March it's a different market.
Yes, yes.
But you know what is interesting, actually? The quality is the most important thing for me, right? So I want to grow with the top quality in the world. So as I say to you, we do the 1% of the diamonds in the world, which correspond to the D and E color, right? Now I go even further. I do the 0.01% in terms of quality by adding some certification to the diamonds.
Right.
So we can now achieve a level which has never been seen before.
Right. So this must be appealing to a certain category of customer.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And it's called lab-grown diamond. And everybody says to me, but that's such an ugly name. And I said, but you know what? Is the name mobile phone nice? No. And we all have one.
Yeah, it sort of caught on, didn't
it? Caught on, yeah.
So yeah, that's a very good observation.
The mine industry has tried for years to say, but they are fake, but they are not fake. And they are called lab, yes. And we should promote the fact that they are lab. So Astrea was one of the first companies to say they are lab-grown diamond, and we are proud of the fact that they are lab-grown diamond.
So how do you see your business developing from here? I mean, you're opening new shops.
Yes.
What are your sort of ambitions for the business?
So we should be turning around 3 million this year, pounds. So it's growing really fast because it was December 2023 when we started. I'm hoping that Paris and New York will be a big success. And then, you know, the world is ours, so...
Would you look to open in more cities, or would you try and put more business through sort of a few key locations?
I think key location is important, but I also think, you know what, the world is changing so much. Social media is taking over so much of our lives that actually we sell a lot online.
Right.
Interestingly, when I grew up, I would have never bought anything online like a diamond or anything of that price. Now, people want to trust a brand. When they trust the brand and they can see the result, we sell a lot online at the moment.
Yeah.
And there is a, actually, I'm going to do the marketing for a company called ShopMy. Have you ever heard about ShopMy?
Go on.
Okay, there is this whole world of influencers in the world. Yeah?
Yeah.
And frankly, I think the world is changing on that front too. And ShopMy created a platform, which is a £1.2 billion company, by the way, where they integrated a lot of influencers who promote brand on it. So I think we need to grow our business when technology advances as well. So I think a lot of it will go on platform as well.
Right. So you've got multiple sort of outlets potentially. Now, right. You mentioned, Natalie, that you started your life in a place called Saint-Emilion in France,
yes.
Which is, to wine drinkers, well known. So it's a premium wine grape. And I believe you were in the wine business too, and it would be
remiss
of me not to ask you about this.
Of course.
So tell me about what you're doing in that space.
So I grew up in a chateau called Château d'Estieux, which it's a Grand Cru Classé of Saint-Emilion. And Saint-Emilion is full of tradition, right? This is also why, like, diamonds and wine fit really well, because it's about value and tradition. And my father is a doctor originally, but every time he made money, decided to buy vineyards. And so we grew up with this mentality. And so every time I sell a company, buy a vineyards with it. So we bought my husband and I in South Africa as well.
So you've sold some companies. So you've got, how many vineyards have you got now then?
Well, between me and my dad, we have seven.
Seven?
Yes.
And where are they?
So in Saint-Emilion, Pomerol, and in South Africa, in Stellenbosch.
Right. Okay.
It's a little passion of ours. Yes.
So how's the wine business at the moment? Because I'm hearing people are drinking less.
Do you know what, actually? That's interesting. So out of my four kids, I'm amazed at 21 years old, they don't drink anymore.
Yeah.
So to be fair, the wine business is not doing as well at the moment. However, Saint-Emilion and Pomerol are still the best grounds.
Yeah.
And so people always still want the best. So we are very lucky to be positioned where we are. But the problem in the wine industry is you really depend on the weather. So you can have some really good years, you can have some really bad years. So Saint-Emilion has been lucky over the last few years, and hopefully they will continue. But as you said, people are drinking less.
Well, it's interesting to me, your strategy in both wine and diamonds is to focus on the top end of the market, the
That's
sort
correct.
Of high-end premium products. That's where you feel you'd like to focus is what I'm hearing. Is that correct? Yeah,
that's absolutely correct. I only want to do the top of the top. So if just to give you an example on the diamond side, so Cartier only does 3 to 5% of their diamonds are D and E color. All our diamonds are D and E color. So, and the reason I'm focusing on that space is because it's the only space which is, first of all, not saturated.
Mm.
And that's a space which I enjoy.
Yeah, yeah, I can see
it's
that.
It's a growing, fast market, and I love disturbing an industry. I find it fascinating.
And in Stellenbosch, in South Africa, what's your wine there? What type of wine
is it? So it's called Marianne Wine Farm, Marianne being the emblem of France, which is why I call it like this. And we have restaurant, bed and breakfast there, and 40 hectares of wine.
Oh, so you have a full business there
as
well.
Yes, actually, we were very lucky because when Nelson Mandela did his 190th year's birthday in Hyde Park, I don't know if you remember, he did his 90th birthday in Hyde Park, he chose Marianne. So it gave us a massive marketing boost.
He chose your wine.
That's correct. Yeah, because he wanted wine which was made from outside and obviously the Bordeaux blend in South Africa.
Right.
So we've been very lucky that the name of Marianne was pushed thanks to that.
Right.
And I'm a big fan of Nelson Mandela.
So, yeah. So if you want to buy Marianne, where do you find that?
Online. Same, on mariannewinefarm.co.za.
mariannewinefarm.co.za. Well, that's really great. So, Natalie, you're leading a disruptor, a rapidly growing business in a big space, big market. What are the biggest challenges you're facing as you grow as a dynamic growing business?
Well, any business faces difficulties on a daily basis. People who tell you that a business goes straight up, it's wrong. I've never seen one who does. So there is challenges on a daily basis. 2 years ago, my challenge was education. Like people didn't know. You would be outside the school gate and one mom out of 50 will know about lab-grown diamond. Today, education and the power of the communication makes it much easier. Now it's scaling it, which is my next challenge, right? So we are opening quite fast between the countries. But the challenges that I'm having is like in any business. First is finding the right people with the right values. And second is making sure that we deliver the best product that can't be seen anywhere else. So we have to be innovative on a daily basis.
Right.
I drink a bit of my wine and that gives me the lot of my ideas.
And what about the people side of things? I imagine you're hiring people.
Yeah, I'm hiring a lot of people at the moment, yes.
How do you get that right?
Well, I don't always, to be honest with you. And I'm pretty fast at saying goodbye when it doesn't work. But the reality is you always have to go a bit with your gut feeling, especially when it's a complete different industry. Because remember, I've got zero background in retail or jewelry, right? I mean, obviously, I love wearing jewelry. But so I had to educate myself quite a lot. And finding the right people on that space is not easy. Interestingly enough, I love the young generation. The name Astrea was really interesting because I really thought, what can I call it? And I say Astrea means star in Latin, but she's also in Greece the deess of the beauty, justice, and clarity. And the reason I found the name is I went to the College of Art, I put an advert, and I gave £500 to the person who gave me the best designs. Believe me, it's much better than when we get into one of the big companies, you pay $20,000 for the same thing.
So you went to the art college. That's
a
very good idea.
I went to the College of Art and did that. So
anyone starting a business should listen to that because it's a really good way of getting creative
input. It's a very good way. And this young generation are amazing on social media ideas and they have to because a lot of the job will be cut anyway with AI. And I think they are much more imaginative. So actually, my best recruits I've been the new generations.
So I'm giving young people an opportunity is
absolutely
a really good thing to do as well. So you say there's a lot involved in the manufacturer. Are there criticisms around that in terms of sustainability?
Well, so that's interesting, actually. So there's been a lot of lobbying from the mine industry to try to say that the lab industry was fake, started like this, right? A lot of people try to sell lab-grown diamond as mine diamond, right?
Yeah.
As I said, we do the opposite, right? We really get the certificate and prove you that they are lab-grown diamond. But yes, there's been so much lobbying, as I say, to try to deter people because it's collapsing of an industry for 100 years. Yeah, I mean, look at, as I mentioned, the Birza Leon. They lost 12 billion valuation in less than 4 years.
Right. So, yeah, that's...
It's definitely
a disruption.
It's a disruption. And you know what? I want to add one more thing. I mentioned it very quickly early on, but actually the lab-grown diamond space is not just for jewelry. It will end up being 5% of what they are for. They're very active on what is semiconductor.
Diamonds are used in industry.
It's an industry.
Medicine.
Like, yeah. You know, as I mentioned, cancer research, you know, the machine who operate people with robots. All of this is much more possible because they are much more clear and they are much more, the quality is much better of lab-grown diamonds. So they use them a lot.
Right.
And it's a massive growing industry.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing your excitement and knowledge on this subject, which I feel much better informed now than I did at the beginning of our conversation. So thanks very much for that. I always ask my guests two questions at the end of our conversations. And the first question, because here at Reed we love Mondays, is what gets you up, Natalie, on a Monday morning?
What gets me up? As in the excitement of another day. I have four kids, as I said, so they wake me up to start with. or my husband, actually, one of them. But it's the fact that, you know what? Look, I was in a complete different industry for 20 years. You can still succeed and wake up and grow up into a different one. So you don't have to do the same thing every day. I went from wine to banking to diamonds, and the world is full of opportunities. Or charity work. I think this is where our children have the chance to do so many things in the world. That's what wakes me up in the morning.
Yeah, well, it's very good and quite right. I agree. And then the last question from my interview book, Why You, is where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
Well, I'd be 53 by then. So...
don't look so worried.
My kids will have left school by then. So I think we will travel a bit more, my husband and I. I'm hoping Astra will have grown enough that I will start being associated with an LVMH or one of the big brands. I hope I'll be really proud of what we've created.
Aligned with one of those big brands?
At some point, yeah.
Okay.
At some point, I want to grow to the next level. But also, I want to wake up in 5 years' time and be proud of what we've done. So that everything is by the book, with the right value, having given back a lot to charity and making my investor proud.
Well, I wish you every success with that.
Thank you.
That sounds like a great ambition, and I look forward to watching your progress. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to me, Natalie.
Thank you for having
me. I enjoyed our conversation. It's a real pleasure. Thank you, Natalie, for joining me on All About Business. I'm your host, James Reed, Chairman and CEO of Reed, a family-run recruitment and philanthropy company. If you'd like to find out more about Astrea London or Reed, you'll find all the links in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.